Welcome to the CCTA Wake Up Call Show. Glad you could join us. By the way, I do want to tell everybody, please go to the cctaxpayers.com website. And up there, you're going to find a document of, we asked a number of candidates for the primary election to give their, to answer six generic questions and two more specific to their office. And we got back some really, really good answers and some very cooperative candidates. Remember, it takes a lot to go out and become a candidate. Put yourself before the public and to be a public servant. And I ask you to go and look at that. But more than that, I ask you to get out to vote. Again, this is CCTA Wake Up Call. I'm Bob Griswold.
Mary Griswold.
Pat Park.
Glenn Fink.
And mom's with us, too. Also,
Thank you.
Okay. Appreciate you joining us. Pat, I guess you have an interesting story.
I read this on military.com. I read military.com every day. I'm a vet. And one of the things that happened just recently is the creator of Pop-Tarts just died. His name was William Bill Post. He created the Pop-Tart in 1964, and he died at age 96 on February 10th. Now, he never worked for the Post Cereal Company, even though his name is Post. He was an Army Air Force veteran who served in occupied Japan after World War II. That's why he made it to military.com. But also because it turns out Pop-Tarts have been used as a instrument of foreign policy, unbeknownst to us who haven't been paying strict attention to the Pop-Tart. There's going to be a Netflix serial about, get it? See what I did there?
Okay.
About Pop-Tarts. coming soon. Any rate.
I'll toast to that.
Okay. It debuts in May, so keep your eye open for creation of the Pop-Tart. In 2009, here's one of the ways the military has used Pop-Tarts. Do you remember when the Somali pirates were holding Captain Richard Phillips hostage? They made the movie with Tom Hanks.
Mm-hmm.
The U.S. Navy plied the Somali pirates with chocolate chip Pop-Tarts to get them to board the USS Bainbridge and begin negotiating for the release of their hostage.
Wow.
Chocolate chip.
Chocolate chip, okay. Top drawer.
It says, before that, however, the shelf-stable toaster pastry was used for a bigger purpose, food for Afghans, the Afghanistan people. On October 7th, 2001, we began launching airstrikes on Afghanistan. Before we did a ground invasion, the Afghans were already in a dire humanitarian crisis, so there was a lack of food. So for months following the initial bombing campaign, American aircraft also dropped millions of packets of food, usually in the form of brightly colored humanitarian daily rations. Each one, packed with 2,200 calories of America's finest, could be dropped in even the most remote locations in Afghanistan and required minimal preparation. They included high-calorie MRE-like staples, including stews, beans, rice, and peanut butter. They also included Pop-Tarts.
And that was probably 2,100 of the 2,200 calories.
So. That's right. Yeah, exactly. That's why we don't eat more Pop-Tarts.
And what did we do to their teeth in the process?
And it points out that in our troops' MREs today, they usually have Pop-Tart. Whether it's the two most used are chocolate chip and the brown sugar cinnamon.
Wow.
My favorite.
My favorite, too.
I would have gone for strawberry.
You would think. Anyway, that's my...
That's your opening comment.
My opening humorous story.
I love it.
The story of the Pop-Tart.
The role that Pop-Tarts have played in American diplomacy and warfare. Amazing.
Well, the road to a man's heart is through his stomach.
Yeah.
That's a given.
Apparently, even Somali pirates have a stomach.
Where do we want to go from here?
I'm going to take a minute and talk about a basketball game. And this was a girls' high school basketball game that was called after at halftime after three young players were injured by a giant male player who was sporting facial hair. The transgender in question was a 6-foot-tall boy playing on a girls' basketball team. And after 16 minutes of competition, three of the female players on the other team were injured by that player. So the coach called it a day. He said, no, we're not, we're going to end this game now. And I want to point out that Title IX was set up to give women an equal opportunity to get scholarships, to achieve athletically, and that kind of thing. When I was in high school, the only sport that girls were allowed in was tennis or field hockey. That was it. There were no other sports open to girls. And Title IX was to change that. And at one point, we met a person who was involved with the lawsuit in Connecticut with the three track stars who had lost scholarships because of a transgender runner who had broken all their records. And this has got to stop. This is unfair. Title IX was to protect women. And we are totally throwing out that protection in the name of giving people who have a mental problem, because sexual dysphoria is a mental issue, and letting them take opportunities away from girls.
I want to comment that on one of the earlier shows that I appeared on, we were talking about Title IX, and I was talking about the distinction between the definition of sex and the definition of gender. And attorneys, believe it or not, fight over the definitions of words a lot of time because you have to be on the same sheet of paper. So when I say fraud, what do I mean by fraud? What do you mean by fraud? Let's make sure we both mean the same thing before we have any meaningful discussion about fraud. Or, for example, great bodily harm. You know, there's a statute, assault with intent to commit great bodily harm. Well, great bodily harm isn't immediately obvious to you what that entails. What I call great bodily harm, you might not call great bodily harm.
Well, I'll tell you, at midnight, stubbing my toe, getting out of bed or whatever else is great bodily harm.
You've been assaulted by your bedside table?
That's right.
Poor dear. So I get tickled when I see people, you know, raising their eyebrows over lawyers fighting over words, but that's what we're talking about. We're soldiers of words, not...
But Pat, to that point, and I would agree, lawyers fighting over words, but we need to have the politicians fighting over the definitions of a word, because so many times we hear a very, very, a phrase used that has no definition. I mean, we've listened to, actually fairly recently, we've listened to some candidates using what we call word salad. It's fancy words, but you put it together, it doesn't really mean anything.
You mean like Kamala's unburdened by the past? The present, unburdened by the past. What does that mean? What past are we unburdening ourselves of?
That's right, and what, yes.
But see, the politicians are lawyers, too. Almost everybody in Congress is a lawyer. So this Title IX is so insidious that they're trying to promulgate another regulation that adds the word gender or changes the definition of sex to include gender so that Title IX will also include transgenders. That completely guts the whole purpose of Title IX. But that's the kind of thing that's in a newspaper or a podcast or somewhere. It's a little teeny story somewhere. You don't even pay attention to it unless the headline is enough to catch your eye, because it's just lawyers arguing over words again.
Mm-hmm. So right now, that one phrase is somewhat ambiguous, I'm going to say, based on the way that they look at it. But what they're trying to do is they're trying to to give it a definite purpose, but the exact opposite of what you and I would want. Much like we heard of the Inflation Recovery Act or whatever.
Oh, yeah, Reduction Act.
Reduction Act, which did everything except reduce inflation.
Inflation, yeah. What's insidious is that we don't pay any attention. And then when somebody gets riled up about it, they go, well, it's the law. Look, yeah. We changed the word. And the left does this all the time. They want to fight over the definition of words and change the definition of words. And right now, for the right, we hear a lot of appeals, don't use the language of the left, because you're granting them their premise by using. So if we say, you know, we're going to adopt your pronouns, then you've already won half the argument. You have to be clear on what you mean and say what you mean.
Another part of this, too, in terms of girls' sports versus boys' sports, when my kids were in high school, one of our daughters played basketball, and we used to go and watch the games. There was no charge to get into the girls' games. They charged you to go into the boys' basketball games. And the other thing was, one of our other kids played soccer. There was not a paved road going to the girls' soccer field, and there were no bleachers. If you went, you drove down a dirt road and you sat on your car or in a lawn chair. The boys had paved roads and bleachers. So we've come a long way, and we don't need to give that away.
On a related local topic, commercial, Bryce's Creek Christian Church is having an event, not this weekend, which next weekend, I want to say it's March 1st, 2nd. It's Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday service, all on transgender topic. And I would just say that's something that should be highly promoted. It'll be informational. They got two big names that's coming to help with that. And that's a bold movement by that church.
Very, very
putting
bold.
Themselves out there. And they're going to have their new building open for those services.
Very good. On that, we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. Thank you. This is a CCTA wake-up call.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business, it's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Welcome back, and thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters. Pat, you have an article on...
I have a very interesting article. As I have noted before, I have been watching Fannie Willis and her trials and tribulations with undisguised glee, because all the stuff that's happening to her couldn't happen to a nicer person. I found this article on February 10th, and I printed it out to bring with me for the next radio show. And it's entitled, Over Half of Fannie Willis's Campaign Contributions Allegedly Tied to Illegal Money Laundering, New Complaint Claims. Now, Fannie Willis is one of the Soros-funded DAs. I don't know if people understand that, but she's just like George Gascon in L.A. and the other guy that got booted out, also in California. Alvin Bragg up in New York, Letitia James also in New York, Soros funded.
Their overwhelming campaigns were funded by George, who had nothing to do with the candidate itself. Yes, of course.
A campaign contribution complaint has been filed that alleges that nearly half of Willis's campaign contributions, amounting to approximately $168,000, include money laundering and identity theft. And one of the things that was interesting to me is that they created the term called smurfing. Now, smurf is that little character.
The little blue guy.
Little blue guy, like got troll hair, right? Little blue guy, smurf. The smurfing is, now this is on the Democrat side. This is using unsuspecting Democrat voters. They use their identity and have them make a series of small donations, $10, $25. However, they make, Patricia from New York, for example, she made 355 donations in one day for a total of $10,432. And according to her information, her employer is not employed.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that violates the maximum campaign contribution that you can make.
Mm-hmm. What is the maximum?
I think it's 3,000.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah. So 10,000, let's see, Miriam, 381 donations, $6,493. Daniel, 239 donations, $8,925, et cetera, et cetera.
But because they're small individual donations, it doesn't raise that flag.
Mm-mm. Nope, until you see it.
Until you aggregate.
Print it out like this.
Until you aggregate the data, yeah.
Right. So it's below the thing. So anyway, when they found it out during Ralph Warnock, and I don't know if you remember, Ralph Warnock is the Marxist senator from Georgia.
He
beat Herschel Walker, and he had much more money than Herschel Walker did. They found this out by analyzing his campaign contributions, which didn't all come from Georgia. Some of the examples in this article note that he had donations from New York, you know, other Democrat hellholes. So the people that were doing this investigation said, well, let's go look in other states and see where this carries us. It's in other states. Now they're looking throughout the 50 states to see if they can find it in every state. The article doesn't cover the results of that investigation. I assume it's still ongoing. What is ironic about this is that if it is true, it's a RICO case against her.
Well, it's a RICO case. However, if I understand correctly, and I may not understand correctly, so you don't have to disclose your campaign finance or the last period until after you've been, quote, elected. And then if you are elected and you have a person of the same party in the prosecutorial role, you're free because they're not going to prosecute you. Your friend isn't going to prosecute.
No, campaign violations, federal law.
Yeah, but if you got somebody that's just not going to bother to prosecute you, I mean, I don't think our current U.S. Attorney General is going to prosecute a certain number of people. They're not going to file charges.
Well, that may be true. That's why I'm voting for Dan Bishop for the Attorney General. Let me get that in there. For the Attorney General in North Carolina, so we have a Republican that will prosecute to enforce the law.
To enforce the law, yeah.
Enforce the law, yes.
And enforce it, I'm trying to be
but
better,
this is
enforce
a problem.
It equally.
Yeah. This is a problem throughout the country, and this is the problem of people like George Soros who are trying to undermine American justice getting in there and putting his people in place.
He's done a good job.
By buying elections. And I'm not going to say take the money out of politics because I honestly don't think that's the answer. But there was a meme going around Facebook for a while that I loved. And it said, we need Congress to put labels on their jackets, like race car drivers, so we know who's sponsoring them. And maybe we're at the point we need to do that with judges, too. The website...
We already have those. They're called Which President
appointed
them. You can tell what their politics are. So the Clinton judge that has been appointed by this Judge Ingvaron to oversee Trump's properties, she can seize his properties. She can approve or disapprove of any of his financial decisions while this thing is under appeal.
That's awful.
And during the whole three-year period that he's not, that he's banned from New York, but he still has properties
but
there.
But the DA, now, the DA, Franny Willis was elected. She's an elected DA, right?
Uh-huh.
And some of our judges are elected and some of them aren't. Some of them are appointed. Some of them are elected. Mm-hmm. OpenSecrets.org is a good place to go to find out what people's campaign contributions were. But it seems to me that we have a problem, not necessarily with the money in politics, but with our ability to follow it and with transparency concerning it. I don't think we're going to get the money out, but I think we need to be able to look at it a whole lot more closely, a whole lot more easily.
Well, when I went to law school, we were told that the importance of, well, we were taught, the importance of precedent, stare decisis, was so that when you read the case law and you had a client come in and they had a set of facts and they wanted your legal opinion about, can I do X? Here's my facts. You look up the relevant law, and you should be able, based on the case law of what judges have ruled on this in the past, you should be able to predict what, if it went to court, what would the opinion of the judge be, so that you have stability, you have predictability mm-hmm. in the law. Now, what we have is, show me who appointed the judge to the bench, and I can predict the outcome of a case. That's yes. how political our judge
and that's,
bench is
that's
now.
Not the way it should be.
No, it's not the way.
When we were talking about money before, and I don't know how you get there, and it's probably impractical, but the money that crosses state lines for elections, to me, just should be improper because we, the people of North Carolina, should be the ones that influence what happens in our state.
That is true.
And I don't know, it's a big nut to crack, but I would think that's something that should be evaluated if we wanted to make sure the will of the people locally was in effect.
Yeah, well, the problem with that is you get into PACs, you get into political action committees, and they obviously are going to be across state lines. For instance, just as a for instance, let's say that North Carolina has a candidate for a major office, for a Council of State office, that is on the record very strongly opposed to abortion. So you're going to get the PAC that wants abortion up until the ninth month throwing money into his opposition. You're going to get pro-life PACs throwing money into his campaign. So you're going to have out-of-state money just based on the issue.
Well, you could make that improper when you go through this process then, you know? I mean, first of all, PACs is that conglomerate of money is not we the people either.
No.
True.
No, and if we brought it back to D.C., K Street is not the people either.
No.
So
we've lost the concept of the people funding the elections and the candidates and getting the money to the candidates that we support. Is that kind of
yeah,
where we are?
Absolutely.
Well, excuse me. This campaign issue with her contributions involves wire fraud, evasion of campaign finance limits, structuring of financial transactions, tax fraud, nonprofit fraud, identity theft, and elder abuse.
That's where all that cash came from that she has to reimburse
right.
her friends.
So what are the chances of any of that actually being dealt with in a legal way?
I don't know.
Well,
it's a matter of political will.
On two fronts, like you said, RICO And also, would anybody ever try to get refunded or put that into what we call the state escheat fund?
Well, in this article, the people that have raised the issue are filing a complaint with the Georgia State Ethics Commission against Fannie Willis for $160,000 in smurfing. The three main topics that this thing involves is, firstly, the first 220 donations lacked a required name and address and identity, which is a clear violation of state law. And that totaled approximately $23,000. Secondly, there were donations exceeding the $3,000 limit, amounting to another $27,000 in unlawful contributions. And the most significant allegation involves smurfing, a method of structured campaign money laundering where large sums of money are divided into smaller amounts and donated to various campaigns, including Willis's, to evade detection. So this is a significant issue. So for somebody who's bad-mouthing Trump is, you know, RICO, stealing elections, la, 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 Ms. Willis needs to look in the mirror.
Wow, yes, yeah. Needs to look in the mirror. That's
especially before she finishes dressing.
I saw an ad for that dress, and she was wearing it backwards.
Okay. Folks, on that, we're going to take another quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. And thank you for staying with us. This is the CCTA Wake Up Call.
Torque Transmission and Automotive Repair is the transmission physician in the New Bern area. If you're experiencing transmission problems, call Charles Grover at 252-637-2399 or stop by the shop on 17 South in New Bern. Torque can install a new or reconditioned transmission, or they can rebuild your transmission if that's what you prefer. See Torque for a variety of minor automotive repairs like brakes, tune-ups, and water pump. You can count on Torque Transmission and Automotive Repair.
The God and Country Christian Alliance has a simple mission, but it is a profound one. They want to inform and educate the public on issues of moral and political concern. They want to restore the Judeo-Christian values upon which this nation was founded to all levels of government. And they want to encourage and activate pro-family voters. Simple, but not easy. The God and Country Christian Alliance meets the third Monday of every month at Moore's Barbecue on MLK in New Bern. Meetings begin promptly at 7 p.m. and end by 8:30. To enjoy dinner with the group before the meeting, arrive between 6 and 6:30. Both the food and the company are good. Meetings include speakers and discussion, and their annual banquets are legendary. Join them on the third Monday of each month for a refreshingly candid view of the world and our place in it.
Just who are these people doing this CCTA program? They're people like you, a photographer, someone that ran their own business, someone retired from the military, just people in the community that love this country and have a desire to do their part to lower taxes and shrink government, to protect individual liberty, and to preserve the U.S. Constitution and free enterprise system. We welcome you to come out to a meeting. If you like what you see and hear, there's a place where you can contribute to the cause. To learn more, go to cctaxpayers.com. That's cctaxpayers.com. The group meets every third Tuesday at Stanley Hall Ballroom in downtown New Bern to enjoy a fantastic speaker and report on CCTA activity since the last meeting. If you've been disappointed with rising taxes and government intrusion, don't just complain. Join Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association and make your voice heard.
Welcome back. And again, thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters. Glad you're staying with the CCTA Wake Up Call. Pat, you've got another article.
I've got another article. Why did Fannie Willis threaten the wife of her lover with prosecution? Now, when this thing first became start to bubble up into the press, it was centered on the first thing we were looking at was the divorce because the issue was more of a, I think, an issue of fairness, which was she hired him, and the day later he filed for divorce.
And he had pulled everything out of his,
their accounts.
Yep.
He hid the amount of money he was getting from Fannie. He filed divorce a day after, which is part of the issue that's in front of Judge McAfee now, is when did this relationship begin? Because that would have been back in 2021, and we're now in 2024. So they took the trips in, 2022, 23? Any rate, they're trying to say that they didn't take the trips until after the case had started, and it had been going on for a while, and then they became lovers. And anyway, she gave him cash, untraceable cash.
Yes.
He can't say where it went, and she won't say where it came from. And we're supposed to just take their word for it. And as a former prosecutor, I know Fannie believes this as well. You put a bad guy on the stand and you say, what did you do about XYZ? And they tell you something that's not even remotely believable. And you say, how can you prove that? Well, you'll have to take my word for it. Would she take their word for it? No, she would not.
No.
And the juries don't either. So here's Willis and Wade both testifying about the sources of their money and how they conducted financial details between the two of them. And it's not remotely believable. They have no receipts. They have nothing but their word. And
the fact that she paid him seven times what she paid the other more qualified prosecutors, I believe.
She's paying him, she was paying him $250 an hour, and she's paying them $100 an hour.
Oh, okay. So.
And I believe at some point there was a situation where she claimed to have paid him something like $800,000 in cash or something.
No, $2,500.
$2,500 in cash.
For one of their trips.
So you always have $2,500 in cash lying around your house, right?
I wish. I hope.
Wish I had that much
money. The one thing I can say here, and it's consistent, and as we go through more of the Trump cases, I believe it's consistent. Say what you will about the cases brought against Trump. The total ineptitude and dishonesty and corruption of the people bringing them makes them almost laughable.
Yeah, if it wasn't so dead serious, they would be laughable.
Yes.
But, as a DA, you're an elected official, you have a budget, it's a state budget, maybe partly county budget. She had county funds, too. You have to manage the budget. You have to go to the legislature every year, testify, here's what I need in my budget. You have to manage your budget. You have to abide by state budget law. And the easiest way to get in trouble is to screw that budget up. And so when I started hearing about this case, when she hired these extra prosecutors, she used county funds that had been given to her office to clear the COVID backlog of cases. And instead, she used it to hire a private attorney. Well, when you get a state budget, it has money in categories.
Misapplication of funds, yes.
So you don't have money in personnel, but you have it in COVID cases. You're going to have to ask the state, can I transfer this money from COVID over here to personnel so I can hire this guy? Secondly, these are red flags when I first started reading about this case. Second red flag, she was required to ask the county for permission to hire a special prosecutor, which she did not do. Thirdly, next red flag, Wade took his oath of office. Now, because she's an elected official, a prosecutor that works for her works on oath as one of her employees. And if they don't file an oath, if she tells them, all right, hit the road because you have no right to be here, you can't. In other words, you serve at will. If she says your services are no longer needed, pack your bags, leave. Okay? He's required to file an oath of office. Thereby, she's granting him part of her authority, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he got these indictments before he ever filed his oath of office. Okay? He didn't do the oath of office for months and months and months. Okay? it makes you wonder, when you're not looking at the law, particularly you're not running your budget right, what else is going slipping in that office?
So if he didn't do the oath of office, but he's paid for being in that office, but you're not in that office, the non-sequitur, yes.
Mm-hmm. It's like if that were county funds, maybe the county can get the funds back. I don't know. Could they claw them back, try to take them back from Mr. Wade? How would he like that? Of course, he already spent them on Fanny.
And Fanny.
Yeah, but he got reimbursed for a lot of it in cash.
I know, and he put it in his pocket. He didn't even put it in the bank.
Now, can we go on to New York?
To New York.
Yes, can we go on to New York?
Where in New York would you like to go?
I would like to go to the Trump case in New York, and I would like to go to the comments of Governor Hochul. Is that how you pronounce
Hochul.
Her name?
Hochul.
Hochul. Addressing New York business owners, and this story is out of The Hill. She was on the Cats Roundtable on WABC, and she said, I think, she was talking about the Trump invitement, charge, whatever, I think that this is really an extraordinary, unusual circumstance, that the law-abiding and rule-following New Yorkers who are business people have nothing to worry about, because they're very different than Donald Trump and his behavior. Now, that's a very interesting statement. And a number of business owners have already stated that they're pulling out of New York because they don't consider it a friendly business environment after this. Because let's face it, if you get on the wrong side of the political machine in New York, it is becoming very obvious that they will come after you, which is what they've done with Trump.
There's no guardrails.
Yeah. So if you're a multi-million dollar company doing business in New York State, why would you stay?
Well,
I'll
tell you.
You're greasing the hands of the people you're supposed to grease, and you're waiting for the wolf to eat you last?
That's right. That's right. As long as I'm running faster than somebody else, then the bear's not going to catch me.
Right. Right.
And then right along with that, I guess the truck drivers have decided to stay.
They'd rather not take loads into New York.
And that is a protest against this ruling directly from
yes.
everything I know.
Well,
and,
you know.
And it's a voluntary protest. They don't really have to go out of their way. All they have to do is not accept certain loads.
Yeah.
But the other part, too, the Trump enterprise resulted in a lot of revenue going to New York State and New York City. Tax revenue, income tax revenue, property tax revenue. I mean, they put a lot of money into New York State coffers and New York City coffers. New York City, because of being a sanctuary city and giving illegal immigrants credit cards with $10,000 balances, is running into some budget problems. They've had to cut the amount of money they're giving to their police. I mean, that makes a whole lot of sense. You cut the police budget and give $10,000 credit cards to illegal immigrants. Yeah, right. And this is going to have an economic, this ruling, if it stands, and I hope it doesn't stand for long, is going to have an economic impact on the state of New York and the city of New York. The other part of this is many years ago, Rush Limbaugh left New York because of the taxes. Sean Hannity has recently left New York because of the taxes. How many the owner of the Buffalo Sabres hockey team left New York because of the taxes years ago. How many people are they going to lose because, number one, of their ridiculous high tax state? Number two, because of the treatment of Trump. And I'm going to add one more thing. There was an attempt in the House of Representatives to raise the SALT limit. Anybody know what the SALT limit is? the state and local tax deduction that you can take on your federal income tax. Donald Trump limited it to $10,000. Somebody in the House of Representatives tried to raise it again to get it up to 20 or 30, because if you live in New York, California, Pennsylvania, or Massachusetts, and you have a $1 million house, your real estate taxes are well over $10,000, and you would like to be able to deduct that whole amount. So these things combined are going to have an impact on the New York State and the New York City economy. And they better get this turned around quickly, and I don't know if they see the danger yet.
No.
Well, and what was discussed earlier was a Clinton-appointed judge. Is the person going to manage the Trump assets? What's the chances of them making the money
decision.
And making the money that would have made made under Trump?
Yes.
Not likely.
Now, I'm going to leave. Where is all of this money from Trump going to go to? Where will it be spent? Folks, we're going to take a quick break and come back with, I'm sure, a final answer on that. This is the CCTA Wake Up Call.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business. It's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Moore's Old Time Barbecue is slow cooked and smoked over hickory in the tradition of the Moore's family for over 70 years. Moore's also serves fried chicken, cooked to order seafood, and homemade side dishes. Open 7 days a week in New Bern, Winterville, Moorhead City, Swanspur, and Jacksonville. Moore's will cater and deliver anywhere you want your truly traditional barbecue and fixings delivered. And remember, if it's not Moore's, it's less.
County Compass is a rapidly growing, free, weekly newspaper throughout eastern North Carolina. At the County Compass, we believe small business is the future of our great nation. Many small business owners have discovered that an ad in the County Compass each week is the most effective, the most affordable way to reach thousands of readers from all walks of life. At the County Compass, we focus entirely on local and regional news. Coverage of important issues that directly affect your life. At the County Compass, we love our readers and we love our advertisers. This Thursday and every Thursday at more than 750 distribution points throughout eastern North Carolina, pick up your free copy of the County Compass newspaper.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
Folks, welcome back. This is the CCTA Wake Up Call Show. Now, a quick answer to that question is there is no answer.
Good one, Bob.
That there is no victim, so you cannot give the money back to the victims because there were no victims. So it will magically disappear in the state funds of New York State for use for some.
Nefarious reasons.
Okay.
I'm believing.
That's as good as it's going to get.
Okay, now we left out something when we were talking about Fanniegate, and we need to go back and pick up our loose end.
Fannie, and this hasn't gotten a lot of attention now because of the testimony of Wade and the depositions that were taken in his divorce case, but when this issue first raised its head, Fannie filed a motion. She was going to be subpoenaed. She and Wade were both going to be subpoenaed to testify in the divorce case. Okay? She didn't want to testify. So she filed a motion asking to quash the subpoena, get rid of the subpoena, or in the alternative, to give her time to conduct an investigation and to depose possible witnesses so that she could make a determination on whether or not she should charge Jocelyn Wade with obstruction of justice, a criminal charge.
A criminal charge?
A criminal charge.
In a divorce case, yes.
With filing a criminal charge against her for obstruction of justice because anything that Jocelyn Wade was raising in her divorce case to do with Fannie Willis was designed to interfere with her Trump case prosecution.
So what we are seeing is someone who knows the law abusing it.
Yes.
For their own purposes.
Yes, absolutely.
And we've seen this every one of these cases.
Yes. But abusing it very poorly based on everything I can assess.
I mean, they should be better at it.
Given the circumstances.
They should be better at it.
And how badly it's going.
Yes.
You know, if we went back 20 years, this would be the daytime soap opera just going on and on and on. A couple of new words each day, or a couple of new disclosures each day.
In the old time, Peyton Place.
Peyton Place.
Remember Divorce Court? Remember that show?
Yes.
Yes.
The only way she could get a divorce was to say he was mentally cruel. So we had to listen to all this testimony about how he had abused her mentally. And it was in black and white, and it just looked like something that should have been running on the PBS channel. Remember on the UHF channel?
With the snow, yes.
There's a lot of that.
Yeah. And then there was Night Court, which is another. I mean, there was the TV show, but there used to be on TV Night Court.
Really?
It was in New York, right? Didn't they run Night Court on TV?
Well, they didn't do it. I'm trying to think back, and when I grew up, this is the New York area, and we would actually go over to Night Court to sit there and to listen to some of the outrageous cases that came up before the court. So there's a guy that was parked by a fire hydrant and at night, they tried to explain, well, I had given my car to my mother to go, and well, you're sure that your mother parks at 1 a.m. outside of Kenny's Bar and Grill? And so the case sort of fell apart on that. And that's the kind of case that you heard, just crazy cases. And we loved it. It was entertainment.
Well, you know, when I watched Night Court growing up, I thought that was a funny show. And when I first went to New Mexico to practice law, when you're in law school, I'd never even seen a trial. You don't see a trial. They don't teach you how to do in court. You have to learn it when you get there. And so our first trial, it was a DWI case, and it was in Fort Sumner, which is one of the other counties. So the judge and his court reporter packed up, and the DA and me, because I was following him around like a puppy, and we all drive an hour and a half to Fort Sumner, have lunch together. The defense attorney came in from Clovis, and he was this big blowhard dude. And so I'm sitting there, and the judge comes in, and he says, we're not going to have trial today because we forgot to tell the defendant to come to court today. And I was sitting there trying to keep this, you know, like, what the hell is this, Night Court? And a lot of stuff like that happened in New Mexico. It was like Night Court until meth took over and everything got really mean. At the beginning, it was funny.
Okay, where are we going?
Got to tell the bad guy to show up. So.
Where are we going now?
How about if I explain how much money Carol may actually get?
Okay, let's go back to the basis of the case and then go from there.
Oh, you mean Carol? Oh, okay.
This lady has accused President Trump of rape in a department store, wearing a dress that wasn't designed till years after the charge, She doesn't remember when it happened. She doesn't remember the details, and there are no witnesses and no contemporary evidence supporting her claim. Okay.
Right.
Take it from there.
Take it from there. Are we on air?
Yes, we are on
we
the
are?
Air.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'm glad I didn't make any odd comment. There are two cases Carol filed, and the first one was defamation because her rape case was precluded by statute of limitations. So New York then went and passed a new law, the Adult Survivors Act, so that she could revive her sexual rape claim by extending the statute of limitations, which sounds to me like an ex post facto, which is passing a law to criminalize behavior that wasn't criminal at the time. It's similar to that because, you know, they passed this law specifically to allow her to go after
that
Trump.
One case, yes.
So she had a defamation case that actually went to court second. The first case was the one after the Adult Survivors Act revived her rape trial. So she's got two cases in the first defamation case, which was heard second, she was granted $5 million. Okay? Jury gave her $5 million for defamation. Then her second case that she filed but was tried first, this is so complicated, she got $18 million for her, let's see, what did she get?
It was a significant number.
Ah, she got $18.3 million in compensatory damages and $65 million in punitive damages.
Oh.
Now, the difference between compensatory and punitive, compensatory damages are the actual loss suffered by the plaintiff. Actual loss. All right, so we're talking about a 70-year-old woman who was writing a part-time column for a magazine. She's 70. So she lost her gig writing this little article, giving dating advice, for God's sake. And so you would have to go out to how old is she going to be when she finally can't write this column anymore, so that you can figure out how many wages is she going to lose.
For $18 million, yeah. 18
for the
plus.
for the $18 million is work she's missing at the age of 70 to whatever age they're, you know, looking at, is that $18 million worth?
Now,
if it's not, then it's going to have to be stricken.
I'm going to add probably a slightly different factor. If Hunter Biden can get $600,000 for a picture that he scribbled, maybe she can actually earn $18 million for her columns. Maybe not.
Well, the other part, would you listen to dating advice from a 70-year-old? Today? I don't think so.
Not one that looks like her. The woman looks like a scarecrow. So they gave her $18 million in compensatory, all right? So that's actual loss to a party. So the jury found that she lost $18 million. How much were they paying her to write that column?
To write that column.
All I can say are how old do they think she would be when she finally finished writing it?
Wow.
$18 million. So then under New York state law, a money judgment is excessive if it deviates materially from what would be reasonable compensation. The standard requires the court to review the evidence presented at trial in support of the award and compare the award to other similar New York cases. A review of New York case law on defamation reveals no comparable awards to this one. In fact, not even close.
Wow.
New York law simply does not support compensatory damages of more than $3 or $4 million. Nowhere near the $18.3 million awarded to Carol by the jury. There are no $18.3 million compensatory damage awards in New York courts, period. Once the award is found to be excessive, it must be lowered to the maximum amount which can be recovered. This is known as the maximum recovery rule. At the very least, Carol's compensatory damages should be reduced from $18 million to $3 or $4 million. There is also the issue of duplicative damage awards. Since she had defamation awards in both cases. Okay. Now we switch to the punitive damages. That's the $65 million the jury tacked on. Compensatory are awarded to compensate someone for actual losses, but punitive damages are awarded in some instances as a punishment. The jury awarded $65 million. It is grossly excessive under the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment to the United States Constitution. United States Supreme Court held in BMW of North America, Inc. versus Gore, that an excessive punitive damage award under state law violates the 14th Amendment due process rights of the party cast in judgment. The court noted that the primary concern is the ratio of the compensatory damages to the punitive damages. In another case, the Supreme Court observed that when compensatory damages are substantial, a punitive damage award equal to the compensatory damage award would usually be the most allowed. So in other words, if she got $6 million for compensatory, she'd get $6 million for punitive.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't the defamation charge, because he said it wasn't true, she was lying, and she was a nutcase?
Yeah, whack job.
Yeah.
Let's be specific.
So I don't regard any of those statements as unrealistic.
No, it's a First Amendment issue. He has the freedom. If you are accused of something, you have the right to say, I didn't do it. I don't know that person. And in my opinion, she's a whack job.
Yeah.
You have the right to say that. And I'd like to know how she could prove that Elle Magazine, which is a lefty magazine, ended her employment there because he called her a whack job. I don't believe that for a minute.
Yeah.
So who comes up with these numbers? Do the jurors just sit in a room and say, I think $65 million?
Yes.
Or are they given guidelines?
They're given guidelines, but they're not given guardrails. In some states, and New York is one of them, they can just come up with whatever. Now, it's up to the judge to lower it. The judge can lower it. But
of course, not this one.
Not this one.
Not this one. Folks, we've run out of time, so this is the end of this show. We may come back with more of this. This is the CCTA Wake Up Call Show. Thank you for listening.
Transmission and Automotive Repair is the transmission physician in the New Bern area. If you're experiencing transmission problems, call Charles Grover at 252-637-2399 or stop by the shop on 17 South in New Bern. Torque can install a new or reconditioned transmission, or they can rebuild your transmission if that's what you prefer. See Torque for a variety of minor automotive repairs like brakes, tune-ups, and water pump. You can count on Torque Transmission and Automotive Repair.
Hey folks, here's a tip. When you think firearms and ammo, think East 70 Palm. They've been on Highway 70 east of New Bern across from the fairgrounds for 31 years. Drew Preston and his staff know firearms. Gun sales have tripled in under a year, and women shooters are the fastest growing part of their business. Their great inventory, over 300 guns in stock, changes daily. And if you want something they don't have, they'll look for it. New and used, rifles, shotguns, and pistols, buy, sell, or trade. And they also have many holsters, scopes, and other gun accessories. Every member of the staff is deeply knowledgeable, and every one of them is an excellent shooter. So don't just come for the inventory, come for the thoughtful advice. East 70 Palm, your home for firearms, ammo, and answers. Highway 70 East, New Bern, across from the fairgrounds.
Moore's Old Time Barbecue is slow cooked and smoked over hickory in the tradition of the Moore's family for over 70 years. Moore's also serves fried chicken, cooked to order seafood, and homemade side dishes. Open 7 days a week in New Bern, Winterville, Moorhead City, Swansboro, and Jacksonville. Moore's will cater and deliver anywhere you want your truly traditional barbecue and fixings delivered. And remember, if it's not Moore's, it's less.